B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show. The Fanatic.
Oh, it's 3 o'clock. It's the Mike Missinelli Show on a Tuesday. Lovely day out there. Beautiful day. Dry. 3 o'clock hours brought to us by Corporate Lease Bakery and Deli. World famous tomato pie, hoagie party, Jay's. Every bit is good. We struggle with this issue every day. One side says one thing, the other side says no. One side says yes, the other side says no. Let's bring in a real authority on what's going to happen here. And he is, of course, Andrew Brandt, National Sports Law Authority, former NFL GM, Executive Director of Morehead Center for Study of Sports Law at Villanova Law School. Andrew, how are you?
Miss, my friend, what are you doing talking about every day with no sports?
We're talking about this. We are zeroed in on this issue, and I know you can straighten this whole thing out, all right? Yeah. So let me ask you, first of all, the general question is, who's most right here, the owners or the players?
A lot to unpack here. Both sides thought they had the deal they thought they had in March, which talked about prorated salaries paid to players. If you stop right there, players are right. But there's language in there, and it's loosey-goosey language, about fans and seats, about game day activities being normal. Then you go with the owners, because that's not normal with no fans as they're projecting this season to be. So I'm a lawyer, you're a lawyer, I read that document, and I'm like, Jesus, I guess both sides are right. The players think they get prorated salaries, the owners go, wait a minute, that's with fans. So now we got no fans. And unlike the NFL, which we'll talk about, there's an extraordinary amount of game day revenues tied to overall revenues in baseball, where football dominated by media revenues. Baseball is dominated by game day revenues, not only ticket sales, but, of course, merchandise and sponsor activation and parking and concessions, so many more games, so many more tickets, etc., which is basically 40% of revenues. So if a baseball team has $200 million in revenues, you know, $80 million is from game day. So that's a problem for baseball. They are trying to get the players to feel that pain. And the players are like, wait a minute, we thought we had prorated. And they're not going to win that argument. But they will win that argument if the owners say, you want prorated? You got prorated. 50 games. And the players say, no, wait a minute. What about a half season? What about 70 games? They're like, nope, prorated, 70 games. So 50 games. So they're basically, the owners are saying, we got this much money. You can have it in our revenue share formula where we're going to play 82 games. Or you can have it in a prorated formula where we play 50 games. And it's not working.
So let's sort this out now, because it looks like the owners can impose a 48-game schedule on them. The players have countered by saying where and when. And now the owners have pulled back. Why?
That's a great question. Because when I see the where and when, and now I see it as you do from Mike Trout and Scherzer and Bryce Harper, and they're not saying where and when, something's up, right? So this is where it gets squirrely. I think there are some owners, and I just don't know how many, that would rather not play. They look at it, and I don't know if it's virus-related. I really don't think it is. I think it's total economics, that they feel they're better off not playing economically, and let's just use this year as a mulligan. That's got to be the reason why Manfred's just not coming out ending all this and saying 48 games starting July 30th, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's been reported that there are 8 teams that don't want to play. And, of course, that's enough. That's all you need to scuttle the season. So what have you heard on that front?
Well, and again, this is the problem with baseball. We don't have a cap. We don't have any regulation system about leveling the playing field. You have teams like the Yankees and Dodgers with $300 million payrolls. You have teams with under $100 million payrolls. And it's got to be the small market teams. It's got to be the Tampas and the Kansas Cities and the Pittsburghs and these teams that just say, you know, we can't compete, you know, with this, so let's just dump it. And that's the problem, because baseball has no cap. They don't have no regulating system. They don't have media contracts that distribute equally to all 32 teams like the NFL. So this is a problem. And in the midst of all this, as I tweeted this morning, they do, they have completed their biggest negotiation ever with media. So baseball business is booming, generally. TNT hasn't been announced, but it's going to be a huge deal, way above what they were getting, while they're fighting the players.
Well, this is the key point, because this is certainly in the players' favor. Now, the others are going, we're going to lose XXX and blah, blah, blah. And first of all, they won't open their books to the players. So the notion is that, you know, billionaires like the owners can take a loss if there is a loss while the asset climbs in value. And in addition to that, the rights fees are going to go way up. So the players are going, come on, man. But see, this is what the fans don't see.
You know, when I was, these NFL players were negotiating the CBA, and they called me for a couple just consulting ideas. And I said, when they start telling you about short-term losses due to whatever, pandemic, whatever, ask them, tell them you'll share in the short-term losses if you can share in the long-term gains.
Yeah.
And they said, the conversation stopped.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And this is what baseball players are. They're smart. They're saying, all right, we get it. We get it, the pandemic. Number one, show us how much you're going to lose. Show us your accounting, your books. No. Number two, your franchise value is escalating. Can we share in that? Can we get a tiny percentage when you bought the team for $200 and you're going to sell for $1.5 billion? No.
Yeah. This is what fans really don't see. So when I here's the thing. There's an inherent mistrust about future negotiations and what the players given in this day will translate to them giving in down the road, because they just don't trust these owners, that and these owners want to pull a fast one and change the collective bargaining and more in their favor and less in the players' favor. So what are they most afraid of in playing 48 games, if that's imposed? How would that be a detriment to them?
I don't know. I think that it's just such a loss of income compared to what they're supposed to make. You know, you can take the player's position and see it very rationally where it was 3 weeks ago, which is, all right, we get it. Half season because of the pandemic, we'll do it. You know, I was supposed to make $6 million, I'll make $3 million. And then when they pull that rug out, then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, no fans, but then you're imposing for players like, I understand no one's going to feel sorry for these guys, but players like Trout and Harper, 75% pay cuts.
Yeah.
You know, because every negotiation's about the next negotiation. This is why I was so against the players in football agreeing to the 17th game, because you know the next negotiation is 18.
Yeah.
You know it.
You give them an inch, and they're going to take more than that. And
so
then
these baseball owners are going to sit there next year. It's next year.
Yeah.
Doing the CBA and say, all right, you guys took, you know, 30% of revenues last year. We'll go to 45.
Yeah.
And you know they're just going to use this negotiation. That's what players are so hesitant right now.
Yeah. The issue of, first of all, I've been covering sports for a long time, and I've never met a player who says to me, I play for the fan. Now, they may say the right things and say a nice heart, crowd, fans are supportive, blah, blah, blah. But they play for themselves. They're all independent contractors trying to make the most money they can make in this game. So this notion of that this is going to destroy baseball in the eyes of fans, and I'm thinking players don't even think one thing about that. How do you put that part of it in perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a law lawyer, but I'm mostly a sports business expert, and having covered negotiations and been in negotiations on the micro level, player and team, but then on the macro level, union and league, you know, listen to those parties. Fans is never part of the equation.
No.
They're never a party to any of this. Now, again, you said lip service. Everyone's doing that lip service. It's almost like coaches. You know, coaches complain in football they can't see the players in the off season. All this stuff about long off season. They're not party to this. They're not party to negotiations.
Yeah.
They're off in the corner.
So it happened before, Andrew. This is a different time. And Steve, I don't think fans are going to miss baseball that much if they don't play, because these other sports are coming back and they're going to be consumed by that. Right. So try to balance what happened last time when fans stayed away and got angry at baseball as opposed to this. Could it happen again, or is that not even a consideration?
I just think there's some very smart people running TNT.
Yeah.
They know more than you and I.
Right.
TNT is not worried about fans staying away. In fact, it's kind of known that they're really paying for the playoffs. I mean, they'll throw in some games in the summer here and there. Sure, ESPN's got to, because they got nothing else to program. But it's all about the playoffs. And fans will watch. I just think fans can stay away for the regular season, maybe. But they'll be there in October whenever the players are.
Yeah, they're probably not able to stay away during the season because it's a nice thing to do. And you're right. If TNT's going to pay a 40% increase, that means they know the fans are going to be watching. And the summertime lends it to the ballpark's a nice experience. And the players know that. The players, first of all, they don't care. Second of all, if they care, they know people are going to be back anyway.
Yeah, and I think, listen, NBA and NHL are doing the bubble. NFL, we don't know what fan experience is going to be. But everyone says, you know, baseball is going to lose to all these sports. You know, baseball will be fine.
They'll
be fine if they come back.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's on Andrew Brand, of course. He is the National Sports Authority. He's the executive director of the Morad Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova Law School. Just to move into the other sports, a little bit of rancor in the NBA ranks about guys wanting to come back, saying it's going to dilute the Black Lives Matter movement and all that kind of thing. How do you think this shakes out?
You know, it's interesting because a player called me. I'm, you know, just reached out DM on Twitter, wanted to talk about, you know, his experience on the call with Kyrie Irving. And, you know, just kind of like, I just think there's too much, you know, I just used the word earlier, mulligan in 2020. Why don't we do that? Because there's a bunch of players, and not LeBron, who holds the most weight, but a bunch of players thinking, let's use this time to really foment our movement about activism and social justice. This guy's concern was more health. He's like, just you as an expert, Andrew, do I get paid if I opt out? I said, what does your union rep say? He says, I should. They're working that out with the league. But if they don't, I don't want to play. I mean, I've got compromised family members. I've got this. I've got that. For 2 months, it's just not worth it. And I think there's some of that going around, too. And it almost seems like more in basketball, which is going to have this bubble environment, than anywhere else. It's interesting. So I think they'll play, and I think they'll get it worked out. But I think Adam Silver, who's the most progressive commissioner, will allow for opt-outs with pay.
With pay. There was a vague statement on that yesterday where we were talking about it, that it wouldn't cost you financially. I don't know whether they were talking down the road. So there are some players, or all of them, are you saying, if they opt out for whatever reason they want to opt out for, they will still get paid?
My sense is we're going to, you know what a TUE is? It's a therapeutic use exemption, like when you have to take Adderall or marijuana. I think we're going to get into TUEs for this. In other words, I think you're going to have to show a doctor's note.
Yeah.
About who you live with, how it's going, what your compromised conditions are. I just don't think Adam Silver, any commissioner, will let you just stay home. Yeah, let you stay home, but not get paid as well.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that shakes out. That's going to be very interesting. All right, so the last question, the percentage that you think baseball will happen right now?
What's that spraying?
Is it less than 40?
Darkness before the dawn. I think it's very dark right now,
yeah.
But I do think it will happen.
You do think it will happen?
Yeah, I'm saying 60-40. It happens with an imposed schedule.
Okay. And you also have a new podcast going, which I know people will find interesting on these kind of issues.
Yeah, I do the business of sports, and a couple of recent ones on race, and Howard Bryan from ESPN I thought was very thoughtful, talk about what's happening in this country in race and race in sports, and just had Alejandro Bedoya of the Union talk about they're the league that got a deal done and starting soon at Disney. And for those who don't know, Ali at the Union, not only a national team player, but really a thoughtful guy who's protested way before this on a lot of issues. interesting podcast. It's called The Business of Sports with Andrew Brandt.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming on, Andrew. We really appreciate it.
Always enjoy it, Mike.
All right, there he is, Andrew Brandt. Laying it out, and you know, the thing we were talking about yesterday, will they get paid? You seem to make a good enough case that you don't feel safe. They'll let you go and get paid. So,
and that solves a lot of issues.
Yeah.
And that if you want to restart to get the money, remember ESPN and all of them are paying the $900 million, not for, let's say, LeBron James. They're playing for the league.
Mm-hmm.
So even if a high-profile player decides not to come, it might be dilution for us, but it serves what the NBA is trying to do, which is recoup all that money.
Wow. All right. Business Sports with Andrew Brandt is the podcast, so check that out. Let's go back to the phones. Ryan in media. Ryan, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Ryan?
Yo, Mike.
What's up, Ryan?
It's been a minute. I've been crazy busy at work. I haven't been able to call in the station. So, but I want to thank you guys for, you know, all the coverage and everything you were doing of the, you know, the whole George Floyd thing. Normally, I'm a, you know, stick to sports on sports radio kind of guy, but I'm glad that that was, you know, topic of conversation for a few weeks because it needed to be.
Yeah, awesome. I'm glad you feel that way.
So, in the words of the recently destatuified Frank Rizzo, the baseball on both sides, they're just a bunch of crumb bums. I can't take it. I'm all MLS'd up. I'm ready for the union. I don't even care. I don't care if they come back. I love baseball. I love it to death. You know, maybe next season, you know, I'll be in. You know, I'm a sports guy, so I can't say I'll be out. You know, but once next season comes along, but this year they play like a 48 game or something stupid like that, and you know, some of the main players don't play. I could care less. So,
yeah, I think I'm at that point too, where I can do without it for now, and then next year pick it back up. You know, we've seen loss of seasons before, so it's just another one of those years where things didn't work out. And like we said with Andrew, baseball's not going to suffer in the minds of fans because of this.
Nah, they'll get people back, and especially going to the ballpark, because you know that's such a different experience than any of the other sports. You know, going to the ballpark in the summertime with the family and all that, and it's affordable.
Yeah,
you know, for the most part. So, but I wanted to get to the Eagles point real quick.
Yes, sir.
About, I definitely agree with you about the like paint by numbers thing with Foles and Doug Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Where I think that Carson Wentz wants to have more of that Peyton Manning with the Colts style offense that revolves around him and his reads at the line. And, you know, that style. But I think Doug is hesitant to do that because of his injury history, and to make the offense completely centered around one guy, you know, give him almost, you know, total control. But then he's not on the field a lot of the time. So I think Doug wants to keep it in his, within his control, within his box of RPO and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where they're butting heads. And I think that he's frustrated with Wentz not being able to stay on the field, and if he has to move in another direction, I think that's, you know, they're looking forward to that. And the whole Alshon Jeffrey stuff is so ridiculous.
Yeah, well, this is what I'm talking about. Like, if you add this all up, all right, they may be thinking that he's not reliable enough, even though it was just a concussion last year and he wasn't really injured. So I think they go down a road that I don't think they have to go down. I would want, he's my quarterback. I would want my quarterback to be as comfortable as possible. I wouldn't want to have a detrimental player on the team that butts heads with my quarterback.
Yep.
I wouldn't want to have a backup quarterback that they drafted who's like a highly rated player from Alabama. I wouldn't do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you got to be in or out. You can't hedge.
Exactly. So it looks like they got a foot and a half out on Wentz.
Yeah. They got to be all in. And you know what? If you're all in on Wentz and you get him everything he needs, you know, all the, you know, line help and receivers, and you get him all the weapons and the coaching, you get him everything he needs, and he can't stay healthy or he can't win it, you know, after this contract is over, then you move on to something else. But right now, you're not even giving him a shot.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. I got you. All right.
Thanks, Mike.
Appreciate the call. Okay, so we have him about 4:30? Or is it 3:30? 3? Oh, okay. I thought he may have changed. Okay, so Hembo will come up in about 10 minutes with some stats on Brandon Brooks. You know, Eagle fans haven't sounded off. I don't know what he can say. It's one of those things. But that's really a major, major thing that just happened.
Gigantic.
Yeah, it's huge.
Best guard in football, maybe a third best player on the team, period, behind the quarterback and Fletcher Cox. And that right side of the line with the center is dominant.
Yes.
And now Lane will be Lane. Kelce will be Kelce. But who's in between them?
Yeah, it's true. And like, you know, today he wasn't going to have all the answers, and he didn't have all the answers on what they're going to do. But they've got to think hard. They've got some options now, or they have to settle on the best option. They drafted a guy. They have a couple guys. They could bring Jason Peters back and try and make him play guard or make him play tackle and switch Dillard. There's so many things that can happen with this, and we'll try to straighten some out with Tim McManus, who's coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. Let's go to San Diego with Jim. Jim, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jim.
What up, Mike?
What's up, Jim?
Hey, man. So what do you guys think about Marquise Goodwin? We mentioned him earlier in the analysis of the receivers. I know he's been hurt, but it's been soft tissue. So what are your thoughts
there? I got no thoughts on him.
Starter?
I got no thoughts on him at all.
I really don't.
What's the best thing we could say about him? At the combine, he ran an unbelievable time, right? Other than that, what can we say about him?
2017.
And he had 50-some catches, right, in 2017. That's it. That's all we have.
Look, I'm just trying to be optimistic.
But you asked me the question. I go, I don't have any idea what Marquise Goodwin is going to provide for this team.
He's got speed, so if Deshaun gets hurt, he could be the speed option, I think, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Can he? I mean, there's a lot of guys with speed that don't amount to anything.
I hear you.
You know, because they drafted two guys with speed, right? We're all convinced, speed, that must mean they're going to contribute. I don't know if they're going to contribute. They're fast guys. That's all they are.
He can catch a little bit, though. I think a white side can't catch. We don't know about Rager yet.
Who can catch? Goodwin?
A little bit proven.
Goodwin can catch a little bit? One year. He caught balls 1 year.
Yeah, that's right. I had him
in fantasy. I hope to God he comes in here and he has a second life. But if you're going to ask me, what do I expect? I got nothing to expect from him.
All right, well, let's keep our fingers crossed.
All right, buddy. Jim, it's cool. And I know you're optimistic, but you know, I look at guys like that. And I go, I don't know. What can I say about that guy? You know. Everybody says the first thing you say about, oh my God, he ran a 4.2 something at the combine. In 2015.
You know how I'm looking at it? Almost like if the Phillies bring up more relievers or they draft a guy, I just want them to throw hard. That's kind of, but I don't know if they can pitch.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just at the point where I'm glad that all these backups are fast.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one of them emerges. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you add a bunch of fast guys and you hope one of them, because they're not all. Like, I think some people think, oh, yeah, they're going to be stacked. No. A couple of these guys are going to get cut, but a bunch of them are going to get cut, actually. But I just hope one of the fast guys can play.
Like you're throwing a bunch of stuff at a wall.
Yeah, because that's what you do. So I just hope that if you get 10 fast guys, you get one that can play versus zero. That's literally as far as I can go with these guys.
That's exactly right. You have no idea whether they can actually perform on a field.
No clue.
And I go to the Shelton Gibson theory. Oh, my God. Come on, man. Can play.
Right.
All right. We'll take a break. I have some views on World Series Game 1 last night that was shown on Comcast. NBC Sports Philadelphia. You know what the first thing that stuck out to me? Not McCarver. Well, I'll do a little McCarver later on that.
Yeah.
But I'm watching the game, and I didn't remember that the best they could do at DH against a lefty was Chris Coast.
Yeah.
Now, think about that for a second.
That great line.
That team won the World Series. He's the best you have as your right-handed DH? Meanwhile, they got cannons from the left side.
Stairs and all those guys.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Don't you think about it? That they didn't have a right-handed bat that bench?
It is, because you had a bunch of power, you're right, from the left side.
Yeah, you had Dobbs you could throw in. You had Jenkins you could throw in there.
All those guys could hit a home run.
Oh, wait a minute. Didn't they have Taguchi on that team?
Was he on the 08 or 09?
I think he was on it.
He was on one of them.
Coast over Taguchi in that situation.
I guess he's a professional hitter.
Coastal Gopher matched in that game last night.
Did not play great.
All right. 610-622-0975. Back after this.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
Oh, it's 3:30. Mike Missinelli Show. Let's get an update on our Twitter poll. And we'll get to the great Hembo. Twitter poll brought to us by Paul B. Moyer and Sons with Natalie Agoff. Nat.
Thanks, Mike. Over 1,200 votes on this one so far. Does Doug Peterson calling Alshon Jeffrey a team leader bother you? 47% say yes. 53% say no. So it's almost split.
53% not bothered by it. No, I'm bothered by it. All right. 53% aren't. Okay. That's okay. All right. Let's get Brandon Brooks goes down for the Eagles. And we're going to try to put it in a numbers perspective on what this really means, because this guy grades out really highly. And when we're talking about grades and numbers, we go to one man, the man who is the maestro of ESPN's behind the scenes maestro, ESPN's Get Up, Paul Hembokides. The great Hembo joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Beyond Fast. Hello, Hembo.
Mike Messinelli, it is a delight to hear your voice. So I think the last time you and I spoke was right after the draft about Jalen Hurts, and that gassed me so much I needed a month off. But I think I'm ready to come back and give it another spin.
Oh, you were high on that, Jay Hurts. I know that.
Well, maybe you can play guard. What do you think?
Yeah, well, let's talk about this, because this is a blow for the Eagles, and unexpected. You wake up in the morning and boom, it's going to be interesting to see what they have to do. But tell us, put it in perspective on what this loss means to the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, from a national perspective, I think this would qualify as sneaky big news. But locally, I think it's safe to say that this is about as impactful an injury as they could have to anyone other than the quarterback. And I'll do the best I can to quantify it for you. So I'll start with this. Carson Wentz took 80 dropbacks last season without Brandon Brooks on the field. He averaged 6 yards per pass attempt on those plays. And for context on that number, Mitchell Trubisky ranked last in that statistic, yards per attempt last year, at 6.1. That's an ugly number for Carson Wentz, albeit a small sample size. So we'll blow it out a little bit, okay? Mm-hmm. Over the last three seasons, I'll give you that sample. The last three seasons, Brooks has been on the field for nearly 1,100 pass blocking plays for the Eagles. He's allowed a total of 8 sacks during that time. And that is the same player who Pro Football Focus created as the number one run blocking guard in 2019. So, like you said in the open, this guy is really favorably as a pass blocker and as a run blocker. And this injury creates a couple specific concerns for me. The first is interior pressure from the right side. That's going to force Wentz to scramble left. And for his career, those numbers are not pretty for Carson Wentz. 22 of 58, taking 7 sacks. And the second aspect, I think, that is definitely worth noting here, and that the Eagles' O-line was among the best in the league last season in preventing sacks and limiting pressure against the blitz, ranking in the top 10 in both of those measures. And that results from years of continuity that this group will no longer have. And the last note that I'll give you, Mike, is this. Wentz ranked 28th among 32 qualified quarterbacks in passer rating last year when his O-line lost multiple blocks on a single play. And if this year's group is a work in progress, as we expect, he's going to have to thrive in that kind of chaos, and hopefully these new weapons will enable him to do that. But last year, he was not able to, although it's difficult to quantify how much of that was the line and how much of that was the guys he was throwing to. I think you and I both agree it was more of the latter.
Yeah, well, this is a total mess, man. And we're obviously what's going through all of our heads, including you as an Eagle fan, like what would be the adequate replacement here? And there's several ways they can go. What were your first thoughts?
My first thought was Jason Peters, right? Just because, he's top of mind, because this guy's going to the Hall of Fame. And you think, that it might go a long way in helping his durability too, because he has so many bigger responsibilities playing last tackle. I don't know what kind of interest there is there. That was my first thought. But we're talking about the number one paid guard in football. This is not someone that you just replace, obviously. What you hope What you hope is that sandwiching someone between Jason Kelce and Lane Johnson, both of whom grade very favorably at their respective positions, can go a long way in sort of flattening that curve. It's very difficult, though, for me to say with any sort of certainty that they could go a specific direction that would come anywhere close to the production that Brooks can provide, especially with those numbers that I provided. Like, that's just the nature of this business. So obviously it's going to be partly incumbent on Wentz to be able to navigate this, because you're replacing right now at least 40% of your offensive line, and that has been the stabilizing force for him. We know, obviously, we've talked plenty about the weaponry. The offensive line's been the unsung hero of this team over the last few years.
So the three alternatives, you just mentioned the one, Peters playing right guard. Another one you can fathom is Peters plays left tackle, where he's played all his life, and Dillard is the guy they moved to guard. And the other one is you fill it in with either you sign a veteran guy or it's a guy already on your roster. Which one of those options suit you the best?
I like the idea of giving Dillard a crack at left tackle, to be honest with you. The performance last year wasn't pretty, but as a college player, he graded out very well. I remember our analytics group is extremely high on Dillard when you look at the measurables and the performance in college, and I think he's ready for that. The other thing too is with the circumstances, you have a chance to sort of turn over a new leaf there, and I'm not sure that you want to go into the season counting on Jason Peters to play the most important position on your line. So I would much prefer to give Dillard that shot at left tackle, and if you can, sweet talk Peters into coming back, the Eagles would theoretically have one of the best right sides of the line that you could, possibly ask for. And then hopefully his durability issues and his sort of mobility, which is not what it once was either, doesn't play as big a role. So I want Dillard's the guy I'm high on, and I think it's high time that we see what he can do.
It's interesting because the right side then would look kind of potent with Lane Johnson and Peters playing the guard. But the left side, you're counting on a guy like Dillard and say Malu on the left side. The right side seems considerably stronger.
You're definitely dealing with a balance issue there. But again, we're forced to deal with imperfect alternatives. Again, we're talking about the number one guard in the league. And I understand like talking offensive line is not sexy, but you mentioned it, I think the fans here, and you certainly understand the context here. This is an enormous deal. So you're in some sense, you're going to have to find the lesser of two evils. I think, playing Jason Peters at left tackle theoretically would be a decision that most Philadelphians would be on board with, because we've seen it and we've seen it work.
Yeah.
But how many times do we see this guy rolled off the field though? Like, it's just that's a tough thing for me to see. Like, you have to just trust that ultimately that your player dev people are going to do their job. And hopefully if you're sandwiching a kid between the center and the right tackle, especially with how good those guys are, these are potential Hall of Fame players, that you might have a chance to at least get league average production at that position.
All right. Let's switch to baseball, because I know you have some thoughts on this and you've been studying this over the last week, and it's gone back and forth, and all of a sudden it was, all right, let's throw the 48 game schedule on them, on the players, and they won't take that, and the players go, well, where and when, and now the owners are backing off, and apparently there are 8 owners don't want to play the season, and that's all you need to cancel the season. Makes sense to this for me.
Yeah, I mean, this is what we're watching, self-mutilation here, and it is completely absurd to me. I mean, this is what happens when you have an enormous decision to make, but you have a zero adults in the room to do it. And I think the point that you made regarding the owners that don't want to play is the most important one that not enough people are making. Because, Mike, there are that is not a small minority. That is a solid contingent of people who are loudly saying to the mouthpiece, Rob Manfred in this case, who's representing them, that we don't want to play. And what we know, because of the unlikelihood that we'll have fans in the stands, or at least anything close to what we normally would, and again, this is, based on the notion that we'll be able to play at all, which I still think, frankly, from a health standpoint, might be a pipe dream, is we're going to lose money anyway. These owners know they're going to lose money anyway. That's why they wanted to drag this thing out. They wanted this to get ugly because of that. If the owners had nearly as much interest in playing as the fans or the players do, we would have a clear path by now. I don't get the sense that that's the case. Rob Manfred has, I think, two jobs as the commissioner of baseball. The first is to be able to represent those owners. Those are the people that he works for. The second is to protect the best interest of the game. Right now, he is doing exclusively the first really badly and not even addressing the second, Mike. Like, ultimately, if you don't have 30 owners that want to play baseball, what are you doing? Because, like, ultimately, the product obviously works a whole lot better, as Tim Kirshen put it today on our show, when the players are on the field. And right now, there is not the fact that it isn't unanimous that the owners even want this to happen is really damning. And that ultimately I think is going to be the biggest handicap for us.
What should Manfred do right now? He's got eight owners don't want to play. That's all, enough to scuttle the season. What should he? I mean, he's not Bowie Kuhn. Like, the job has changed, and he's not a personality. Like, what should he do?
Yeah, I think he should stop acting like a litigator, which is his background. And you mentioned Bowie Kuhn. My thought was Kennesaw Mountain Landis. Who certainly
Way back when, you go to Judge Landis.
The first thing we can't do, like, we need to stop having public relations feuds publicly with these guys, because that, during this current time, optically looks terrible. But if the players have made it overwhelmingly clear that we are willing to play for prorated salaries, right, when and where is what you're seeing all over social media today, mm-hmm. and that's a really good marketing campaign. Mm-hmm. Rob Manfred needs to say, all right, we can't have any issues here. So long as we can agree that if I unilaterally say we're going to play a season of this length, even if it's an unsatisfactory length, that the union is not going to come back and create a lawsuit. If so long as we can get there, Rob Manfred needs to say we are starting a baseball season on August 1st. It's going to be 54 games long, and I'm done doing this, because ultimately mm-hmm. what's happened the last month is totally counterproductive. They haven't, Mike, they're not 1% closer to playing a baseball than they were the last time you and I talked. Yeah. So that's
ultimately. Well, the thing I'm getting to is he can't make a decision when owners give him no power to make that decision.
Sure, but that comes to my earlier point, Mike, when I said he had these two prongs to his job. And if he right now, you can't make a good argument that Rob Manfred is looking out for the best interest of the game, because the best interest of the game, no one thinks the best interest of the game, other than those eight people, is not
the play. I totally agree with you. He's weak.
Come on.
Is what it comes down to.
But I'm also not one who's willing to let the players just totally off scot-free here, because these are unprecedented times, mm-hmm. right? The players have been extremely unwilling to operate in good faith. I genuinely believe that. And the fact that there's no unified voice, the fact that they've been, I think, sort of frankly scattered and sort of hiding behind Twitter and mm-hmm. Tony Clark's press releases is not a good look either. This is showing a blatant lack of leadership from their standpoint. Mm-hmm. I'm on the player's side, which is remarkable, because usually in matters like these, the fans, get behind their teams, not the players. But I think Major League Baseball has bungled this so badly that's left us with no other choice.
Yeah, I agree. I frankly don't think either party wants to play at this point. And I'm okay, because my mind's going to be occupied by this other stuff.
You know, the last time we had a year in this country, Mike Missanelli, without professional baseball?
How long ago was it?
It was 1868.
So
that was the last time.
I think I covered that game. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I covered that game. Yeah,
Andrew Johnson was on the throne during that time. That's how long it's been. And think of the things that we have endured and still play baseball.
Yeah.
The fact that we can't get, we're not even talking about the coronavirus. We're talking about dollars and cents. It is absurd.
Yeah. Hembo, always a pleasure, man. Hang in there, and I assume that the show keeps trudging along, and wherever you're doing it from these days, keep doing it.
You're a good man. We'll talk again soon.
All right, there he is, Paul Hembakidis. Hembo from the ESPN Morning Show, Get Up, the behind-the-scenes brain of that show. All right, let's take a break. 610-632-0975. So one more party to be heard from Tim McManus on the Eagles, and who else we have? Oh, it's right. Sal Pal's coming on today. I completely forgot. It's a Sal Pal day.
Jam-packed today.
Tuesdays with Sal at the 5 o'clock hour.
Jam-packed show.
There you go. All right. We'll get all kinds of views left here. And your calls on the Mike Missanelli Show on 97.5 The Fanatic, NBC Sports Philly.
Mike Missanelli.
On 90. The Mike Missanelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
The Fanatic.
All
right, it's the Mike Misnelli Show at 3:48 on a nice crisp, dry day out there. Doug Peterson spoke today on a video conference. He did talk about Carson. It's not like he didn't talk about Carson. I think we got consumed with the other things he said that may not be in Carson's favor. But he said Carson is doing his part, basically, right? Let's hear what the head football coach has to say about his quarterback.
Carson's done it in the past, obviously, but now during this time, you know, one of the things, it's been small group, but it doesn't go without saying it's a great way to start building chemistry, especially with the amount of young receivers that we have, you know, working with Carson.
All right, well, that's good. He's got some chemistry going with the young players. This is good. And so let me hear what he had to say about Alshon and the young players, and I'll try to connect the dots here.
Alshon's one of the guys. The dialogue that he's had in the receiver room, being able to converse with some of the young players that we have on our roster. But yeah, he is a big part of the process moving forward, and he's a great leader, and he's going to be able to help the young players come along.
Wow. So we got all the problems solved now. You got one guy helping out the young receivers. You got the other guy helping out the young receivers. So everything is hunky-dory, don't you think?
No. That's what I'm concerned about. So Carson Gets has the young guys. He had Rager and a couple of the other young guys, Ortega Whiteside, Quez Watkins, having the young receivers out with him. Mm-hmm. And that's great in Texas working out.
Yeah.
Good. But then the coach says that Alshon's in the ears of the young receivers. So on the one side, you're getting it from the quarterback, the guy you're going to be out there who's throwing you the ball. On the other side, you're getting it from a guy who hates the quarterback. Mm-hmm. How is that okay? Like, how do you allow that to happen?
Listen, man, one's a leader, the other's a leader.
Okay.
This head coach just said it. One's helping out with the leadership, the other's helping out with leadership. Maybe both the leaders can come together.
They're going to have to.
Yeah, but not really. See, that's at first, not really. Like, at camp, mm-hmm. Alshon will be around, but he's not going to be participating because of the foot.
Right.
And then that's why I just.
So he's got that sideline pollution factor.
Right. I don't like
where
that.
Where he starts whispering.
Then there's going to be other parts where there's sight adjustments. It's not as simple as you get to the line and run a post.
Yeah.
It's going to be inside leverage, outside leverage, all that kind of stuff. Man, zone, et cetera, blitz, all that stuff. Carson knows the offense.
Right.
There's going to be a time where he throws the ball and one of these young guys, because they're young, are going to be in the wrong spot.
So he comes over to the sidelines and there's Alshon.
See, you were wide open. Meanwhile, the quarterback threw it where it was supposed to be, outside.
You think
receivers
Alshon
inside.
Would be that kind of a cur.
Yes.
You really think he's going to be that?
Yes.
That kind of a cur.
That's very petty.
A guy would come up to practice field and he would go, see what I'm talking about?
That's petty.
You think he would do that?
I do. Because.
He can't be that petty.
Because the worst thing you can have is the internal leaks. Multiple years. Remember, Alshon felt comfortable talking to the media Dallas week of a season that was coming down to the wire. Like if you do that, you'll easily backstab him to a rookie to pollute the waters to set the stage for Hurts.
Yeah.
That's your future quarterback. Don't worry about it. And he got his money. What you going to do to Alshon? Like, I don't trust it. And this is where the coach should make Alshon publicly talk about how great Carson is.
Yeah.
Like, that should have been a part of the deal with him coming back. I know, like, Bluff, on a video chat, he should say, hey, my foot's healing. Mm-hmm. I just want to say that Carson Wentz has been a great leader. He's really helped me in my career. Can't wait to get back to have him throwing to me. There should be some public thing because they know how much smoke's out there.
Yeah.
And then they're just going to say that?
Yeah.
That's disrespect.
All right. Back to the calls in a second. But since baseball's shut down, we're left. But it's actually a pretty good week at NBC Sports Philly because it took us through all the series. The Dodgers series was great. And did you notice that Larry Bowa was the coach on that Dodgers team?
Yeah, him and Torrey got real tight.
Yeah.
Him and Torrey got tight.
He wasn't like the bench coach was somebody else, but I saw Bowa like lurking in the background during that series.
And then he went up to the Yankees with him.
Right.
And then transferred over to the Dodgers. They got tight, yeah.
Yes. So last night, because game one, Cole Hamels pitches a jam against Scott Kazmir. And I'm listening to my favorite announcer, Tim McCarver, with Joe Buck. And it was a moment in the game when Deanna Navarro, the catcher for the Tampa Bay Rays, is up to the bat, and he's in the box, and he looks like he's chatting a little bit with Chooch.
So McCarver goes, DeAndre Navarro from Venezuela, a little conversation with his catching counterpart, Carlos Ruiz. Ruiz also from Venezuela. And I'm going, that would have been a great little detail, except for the fact that Ruiz is from Panama. And they might not even speak the same dialect. And the conversation may have been as short as hola.
Right.
So,
right.
Come on.
Like he didn't have
and
any.
It just goes on and on. And it's like over the time, like, Chooch is the starting catcher. So later, you're going to get. Wait, Brad lives in the game. Well, that's the reason why Carlos Ruiz starts over Coast, because he's a better blocker of the baseball. Dude, shut up! Ruiz is the starting catcher. Coast is a backup of backups.
A career backup. A lifetime backup.
Oh, stop it. I can't take it. I got to get through this whole series with him, man.
Yeah, I know.
I'll have some more McCarver tomorrow.
Game two tonight.
610-632-0975. Sometimes a catcher gets hot with that chest protector. And that's the reason why some guys are trying to go up there with cheesecloth. It just comes out of nowhere. It makes no sense.
It's just like rambling.
Thanks, Tim.
I'm back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.